with Jason Longshore and special guest CCV from the Off the Woodwork podcast and the Dukes of Bell show. How you doing, CCV?
It's good, man. It's weird to be on this side of the camera. I'm usually watching you guys on Facebook Live, so it's cool to actually be here and be able to contribute for a little bit before I have to jump back upstairs and do Dukes with Bell.
Cool. Today is our 17th episode, so a little special, mix it up. You know, I'm rocking WrestleMania shirt, you know, so and we've got the ATL UTV on my mind, so... We've got a lot to cover today, so make sure you're sending your Facebook questions in to us. You know, like this page, share it, so you can share it to everybody on Facebook. And Jason, let's get into it. Let's talk about Barco. He's landed. He's in the States, mm-hmm. and he's reported with us in Orlando.
He's sipping on some mate with the guys, playing some FIFA last night. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a perfect fit for him. You know, I mean, it's not going into a team like San Jose. With a Swedish manager, heavy Swedish influence. Not going into Colorado with a former New Zealand manager, a bunch of New Zealand national team players. He's coming into a team with Tata Martino, with a group of South American players who are a little bit older than him, mm-hmm. but have been through what he's been through. So I think it's an easy fit.
I think you're 100% right. He walked into a situation where it's relatable. Like, the guys can say, hey, look, we've been there, done that. You know, the transition coming from South America to the United States. You come to a place like Atlanta, a guy like me who's from California who comes to Atlanta, and you can really see it's a melting pot, especially for South American and Caribbean countries. So to come here and be able to relate to a lot of people and say, hey, this is what's going on here. This is how the city sets up. I think he's picked the perfect team for him. And even when your coach says, you should probably go to a different league, I think he made the right decision when it comes from him, his family, and his growth.
Yeah, and I saw on the article today that LGP reached out to him, mm-hmm. you know, before he came out. And also, you know, last night, you know, I saw on Instagram, just like you said, they're playing FIFA, they're listening to music, they're relaxing, having a good time. And, you know, there's a joke around Twitter, it's like, man, he's just rushed into the FIFA game already. So, very bold from him. But
I always wonder, when you play FIFA, do you use yourself? I'm like, you think about it, when we play, you know, we create ourselves. I mean, Craig is a monster at FIFA 2018. Yeah. You never want to see that guy. He scores all the time. But I wonder, do these guys actually play and use themselves when they play?
See, I couldn't create myself in FIFA, but I would in the wrestling games.
Yeah.
You know, it was all about...
Well, you're 6'5", something then, right?
Yeah, 6'5", no, I'm not Jarrett now. I'm 6'1". I'm not 6'5", monster like Jarrett.
See, that was me on NFL and Madden. I was 6'5", 220. I mean, you could totally tell that's exactly what I look like now. But, yeah. So that's why I always love, you know, hearing and seeing these guys kind of behind the scenes playing FIFA. And I think those things are such huge for a young guy to just be able to say, hey, look, dude, just be yourself. We're a family first. You know, we take them in. And at the end of the day, we all can just, you know, relate and kick back and be cool. And let's let soccer do its own thing.
Well, that's why you go to Orlando for this part of the trip, too. Yeah. Because it's one thing to be here training at home. Guys go home after training. You're in Orlando, the guys are staying in hotel rooms, they're playing FIFA, sharing mate, you know, going out to hang out. You're getting some bonding. That's
bonding
really important right now.
Yeah. I mean, just like kind of like if you ever played like, you know, football or anything, like 2 days, or like if you went off on campus like I did, like it's a bonding experience, mm-hmm. having everybody grouped together. You eat, you know, all your social life is together. So I think it's a perfect situation for him to get situated with the team and then, you know, spend a little over a week and a half and then come back to Atlanta before they go to Nashville.
Because you've seen that. You said, especially with football, a lot of people will relate to if you played high school football, you had camps that you went away for a week or so, that you're able to do these things, stay in dorms, and be able to kind of come together as a team. So when you're actually out there on the field, it's like you can get away from all the distractions that are home. Because being 18 and being in Atlanta, man, there are some distractions. So to be able to get away for a little bit, kind of bond with the guys, and then kind of go forward as a team, I think that's definitely the right way to do it.
Well, you've got a mix of guys with this team, too. You know, you have some guys with families. Go home to the wife, go home to the kids. You have guys like Barco and Lagos Kunga and Andrew Carlton, the young guys. So I want to see how it all comes together. Last year was great where you had, you know, a mix of guys coming together. You had a starting lineup, you know, with young and old. And I want to see how this group blends. But with that core, and I think LGP is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, a little bit older. Mm-hmm. He's been to Europe before on loan. I think he's a guy who can kind of bridge both sides. And he's picked up English, I mean, really quickly, and that's an underrated part of this. You know, he can go and have those conversations a little more in depth with Parkhurst, with Larenowitz, with the young American guys, but then he can hang out with the Argentines too, and he can fit in both. He's the bridge between both, I think.
And I think they respect him. At the end of the day, like you said, he's played overseas. He's been there and done that. It's one thing to not never done it, and some old head comes up and tells you, this is how you got to do it. I'm like, dude, you've never done it. How can you tell me? But to see, like, no, he's been there and done that. When he tells you that, he's only telling you because he doesn't want you to make the same mistakes I made when I was 18 and 19. It makes it a whole lot easier for those guys to buy in.
Think about it. Last year, Carmona was that guy, you know, mm-hmm. an older player. But now LGP, you're a little bit younger, but I think it was Atlanta United Fan TV who said it on Twitter, you're looking at a future captain. in the way he's handling this, to reach out proactively to Ezekiel and say, look, you're going to come in, you're going to be part of the family here. That's big. And definitely potential future captain.
Yeah, and also I think it's going to help this year of year two in the MLS for a lot of these South American players that came, you know, this is first time in the league, kind of got situated on the different the travel, you know, they had to go through. But you know, I think it's good. And also year two under Tata, you know, it's more of a familiar system for a lot majority of the players.
Yeah, we talk about it on Off the Woodwork a lot of times. I like to try to relate it to people who you aren't big soccer fans. You may like football or basketball, and you always talk about, you can see with the Falcons in year two under a different offensive coordinator, you hope that the offense and the increases are better the second year around. So that's why we're excited from what you saw from the first year, because at the end of the day, once you play with people longer, you understand what they're good at and what they're not good at, how to use these guys better. And we've seen Tata time and time again plug and play and put guys in position to be successful. So as he sees more reps from these guys, he can then demand more for them. So that's what we're extremely excited about what we can see in coming up in year two.
Yeah. It's funny, being here in Atlanta, you can take things from the Falcons and take things from the Hawks and compare it to Atlanta United. You know, what was Dan Quinn's thing when he first came in? He wanted players who were fast
and physical.
Physical. That's Atlanta United. They want to be fast. They want to be fluid, which is a little more soccer-centric. But the speed is very, very important. And then look back to the Hawks when they were leading the Eastern Conference and that team, the passing. You know, Budenholzer's style with the passing game. Look at Atlanta United with possession. You know, there's some easy parallels for new fans.
Yeah, and let's talk a little something that happened late last week. Carlos Carmona, you know, leaving the team. You know, unfortunately he had to go, but you know, we understand what was going on there with his wife being pregnant. She can't travel. I mean, you can't have a player that's thinking, oh, geez, in the back of my mind, you know, thinking about his family and stuff. And he hasn't been in his home Chile in over 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
Yeah, so it's. And he's going to a major club there, and they're going to be fighting in the South American tournament there. Yeah. So, you know, it was unfortunate, but, you know.
It's understandable.
Well, we don't want to stand in that guy's way. We don't want to drag anything out. Just get it done. You know, move on.
It took a while to build it up to where it made sense, I think, for everybody. And I think there could have been some additional complications on the pregnancy side that his wife could not come back to Atlanta with him. That made it a little bit harder for him. Colo-Colo reportedly upped their offer as well. So Atlanta United reportedly received $1.5 million in a transfer for a player they brought in on a free.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wins in this deal. You know, Colo-Colo is going into Copa Libertadores now with a star player to add to that group. Salary-wise, he's going to be taken care of. He has a guaranteed contract for more years now as well. And he's with one of the major clubs in his home country. So he wins. I think the family wins. Colo-Colo gets the player they need. Atlanta United gets some money in to either replace him now or replace him later.
Yeah, I think you're right when it comes down to the business side of it. And from a personal side, me having kids, I know at the end of the day, it's like, dude, you want a guy to go out there and play and not knowing what's going on here, your wife. Everybody knows mom ain't happy, nobody's happy. So you definitely got to make sure your wife's good, make sure the kids and everything and all that stuff is going good. So at the end of the day, it's like you don't want a player that's going to be distracted when you're miles away from your family and you have this going on. It's like it totally makes sense at the end of the day. And like I said, everybody ends up winning at the end of this game.
There always comes a point. Every player has a price. Every player has a time where it's time to move on. I mean, that's just the soccer world. It's not like the other sports here in the U.S. where you have one top league and that's it. And you have maybe 30 teams chasing you, you have an unlimited number of teams potentially chasing you in this game. So for Carmona and for Atlanta, this was the right time to make this deal, both for him and for Atlanta United, because they did it early enough in preseason. They can figure out, does Larentowicz and Nagby work? Does that pairing work? Or do we need to go find somebody?
Mm-hmm.
You even can wait till the summer window coming after a World Cup, where now you have some additional allocation money to where if you make a decision, we want to go get this player that's available who is a huge upgrade, then you can go do it. You can also see if Chris Goslin's ready to step up and play some minutes with the first team. And USL is going to be a big part for him early. If he lights it up in USL, you might not have to make a change, and your holding midfielder of the future might already be here.
Yeah, and are there any players off the top of your head that you think would fit well as a defensive midfielder?
I mean,
but
that's the thing about Tata Martino's Rolodex. You know, he's going to go into it so deep that there's players that we don't know.
Right.
You know, and
hold on, there's nobody you don't know. Let's just start there.
Let's be fair here. There's a lot of players in South America that I don't know on a regular basis, and Tata Martino and his connections, they have that. They also know who might be available, and that's the other part that's hard to guess. You know, the Argentine league, we can go through holding midfielders and find five guys, but they might not be available. might not be available if anybody calls. They might be available if Tata calls. And that's right. The different connection here. If it's me, I think you wait till after the World Cup. I don't think you have to rush into it. Larenowitz showed no signs of wear and tear last year. I'm completely comfortable with him playing the exact same role he did last year. Darlington Nagbe is the eight, plays it differently than Carmona did, but he's also going to improve the attack more than Carmona would have. The defense is going to be a little more exposed, but does that balance work? That's the big question for me coming in. I don't think you have to rush in to go in to replace Larenowitz in the starting lineup.
Yeah, especially this year with the more balanced schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not piling schedule on. There's not a lot of
massive road trips.
I have to fly out to the Pacific Northwest and play a bunch of travel like that. It's more manageable this year. Yeah. And we're not. And I think we have the second least miles flown this year in the league. So I think that's a big deal as well.
You might look at some depth right now.
Right.
But I don't think you're looking at a starting level guy. And that's where it gets into a challenge with how Tata manages it. Because if you go get 20 starting level guys, well, you're going to have 9 outside of the starting lineup every week. You're going to have 2 outside of the 18, not even on the bench.
Right.
Are they going to be happy? So you've got to find that balance, guys who are comfortable with their role. And Atlanta made a signing last night with a guy that I think fits into a role very well for this team with Sal Zizo.
Yeah, and let's transition. Let's talk about him. I mean, much needed depth at least for right back, and he has played center back
played when New York switched last year to that 3-6-1.
Right,
he played as a center back for a little while. He lost his spot in the starting lineup with them in the midst of that switch because Tyler Adams emerged on the right side, and they had other options at center back. So he went to the bench. They didn't pick up his option, looking for a new club. This is a perfect fit because he can do the center back role if needed in a 3-man back line. He can play the right back. He can even play right mid. And he's a player who's comfortable attacking, comfortable on the ball.
We kind of talked a little bit about this off air, but do you see us going to more of a 3-person back line now? Because you've got these kind of guys that can kind of plug and play that way, and we have so much firepower going forward. Yeah. Like I said, with Nagbe being able to start the attack, do you see us more as a 3-back line compared to a 4?
Some. I don't think it's going to be the default, because I think the default setup is the best way to get the most talent on the field. But certain situations, maybe a midweek match, maybe certain opponents, it will make sense. And now with Zizo, it's a little bit easier to do, because before, you were either dropping Larenowitz to the back line and keeping Escobar out wide right, or you were moving a Nagbe or a Gressel or somebody who's not a right wing back into that role. Now it's comfortable where you move Escobar in the middle, you play Parkhurst, LGP, and Escobar with Garza on the left, Zizo on the right, and you can play that 3/5 look that works really well. Larenowitz as your 6 in front of them. And then who's coming off? Is it Nagbe? Is it Marco? Is it Almiron? That's where
that's a good problem. It's a good problem to have. Exactly.
But that's the 3-man back line, the 3-center back line that is tricky because you're going to have to remove one of your midfielders to do that.
And I mean, of course, you know, when we're chasing a game too, I think it provides us more options there to, you know, finagle the formation.
You've got a lot of players who can play a lot of positions with this team, and you can change the shape in game really well with this group. That's what's great. And you can have Azizo on the bench who can fill 3 different roles coming off the bench if needed.
And that's what I think the one kind of takeaway from last year you saw was when we had injuries or when we had tired legs, you saw a lot of guys that we thought were playing out of position that you found that Tata got confidence in and say, I can plug and play this guy. I can put Gressel here.
Chris McCann,
Tito Michalba. You got all these guys that you can just kind of plug in that know they can give you quality minutes out there and be able to do what you want them to do. So that's why as they create depth and add more depth, you're like, man, the sky's the limit for this team because – heaven forbid, knock on wood, something does happen to somebody, you lose Martinez for 3 months, you always have another guy that you can plug and play to make work.
On that point, I think now with this year, you kind of know if Martinez does go down. I mean, you saw Tito last year, like, is very capable of leading the attack up there. And we've also got some options, too, with Romario Williams.
Yeah, great piece today in the AJC from Doug Robertson, interview with Williams to kind of get to know him and what his mindset is. He's been in the USL the last 2 years, scored double-digit goals. This is his chance to really lock down an MLS job. He doesn't beat out Martinez, but he becomes the first option off the bench, and he's got to take hold of that.
That's super sub.
Yeah, I mean, that was an area we lacked last year.
Yeah.
You know, Jacob Peterson filled it some, but Williams is a closer representation to what Martinez gives you.
Yeah, and right before we get to your Facebook questions, yeah, keep on sending those, and we're about to get to them. Jacob Peterson got waived by Atlanta United, I think it was yesterday. Your thoughts on that?
Not a shock, because he was sitting on a senior roster spot. You had to improve the depth on the back line to make room for Zuzo, mm-hmm. because you have depth and options up top. Yeah. You know, Peterson would have been third, fourth, fifth on the depth chart. You needed a player like Zuzo, and you probably weren't going to be able to bring Zuzo in unless you cleared up the senior roster spot.
We kind of compared to other sports. Like you said, if you have a fourth wide receiver and you need a D-tackle.
Yep.
I'm sorry. We already got Julio, man. We already got these guys. We need to address the offensive line, and he's kind of one of those cap figure kind of casualties when it comes down to when it's all said and done.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
All right, now let's get to some of your questions and statements. I love when y'all do. I see Chris says, we are here rowdy and proud. I'm liking the enthusiasm.
What's up, Chris?
Just next weekend, we're almost to preseason.
Jeez, like the countdown. Come on.
It's almost here. Jamie says, Jamie O. Walker says, great stuff. Shouts to my good friend Carlos and Jason. I'm getting to a game this year.
Nice.
You're missing out, bro. I'll tell you, it's an amazing atmosphere. Being from football, basketball, going all those, the best seat, the best ticket in this town is Atlanta United. Yeah. 70,000 strong.
Definitely is. And see, Chris asked, so will there be any TV coverage of the preseason match against Nashville?
I have not heard anything about TV, but I was told that we can actually say this now, so we can break a little news.
Break a little news. Here we go.
92.9 is going to have the Nashville match.
So why even watch it on TV when you can hear this guy on the call on 92.9 The Game next week?
Yeah, and then also with that, I know CCV's got to go up to do the Dukes and Bell show. It's about to be on 2 o'clock, but next Friday, we are 1990 Games going up to Nashville, and we're doing a live broadcast with the Dukes and Bell show. So we're going to be at Tailgate Brewery in Music Row. So if you're coming out there, if you're getting there early, we're going to be there 1 to 6 Central Time. So we're going to have some special guests there. We're going to have some prize giveaways. I think we're going to have the shirt available to give away.
We'll
have
Dukes and Bell out there. It's going to be an amazing
atmosphere. So come on out with us. You know, bring your scarves, bring your chants. You know, kick off your soccer weekend with us with 1990 Games. So CCV, appreciate you coming.
Thanks, man.
For our 17th episode. Yeah,
the underboss is messaging us saying you need to get up there.
Get your butt upstairs now. It's been brilliant.
Check out Off the Woodwork tomorrow. Yes. They should be released around 4:30 or 5.
Yeah, you know me, I'm lazy. Yeah, so I'll get up there.
Jarrett Smith and CCV do a great job. So make sure you subscribe to Off the Woodwork on iTunes. It's always some great stuff. All right, let's continue with the Facebook questions here. Let's see. John says, do you think Khan is number one Atlanta United 2 while Hildebrandt backs up Kazan, vice versa, or do they rotate between the squads?
I think they rotate. I think that's a way to keep Alec Kahn and Mitch Hildebrandt fresh. Don't forget Justin Garces from the academy as well, started for the U17 national team at the World Cup. I think he'll get some starts with Atlanta United 2, but goalkeepers, you want to keep them fresh. It's really hard for a guy to come off the bench after having not played. And Brad Kazan's the number one here. So it's going to be down to Kahn and Hildebrandt picking up some games to stay sharp in Gwinnett and on the road with Atlanta United, too.
Let's see. Carl asked, so at what stage to preseason will we see the potential starting 11 for 2018? We saw it close to the starting 11 in Chattanooga last year. Thoughts?
Yeah, you might see it in Nashville. I think Nashville will be similar to the Chattanooga match last year, where it's starters for 30 or 45 minutes, depending on where they are fitness-wise, and in a heavy second half, second string and third string rotation. I think you'll see the homegrowns in that match in the second half. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be an opportunity for players to impress. Charleston, I think at least one of the matches will be close to a regular match, where you'll see the starters for 60 to 75 minutes, and the others will be more rotation. Last year, it was the Seattle match, the second match in Charleston, that was your starting group into the second half, mm-hmm. you know, with minor changes, I think, at halftime. And the funny thing was Seattle went the opposite way. Seattle went with their second string first and then brought their starters in when Atlanta was pulling its starters.
Right.
That's why you had some friction between those two teams a little bit.
Let's see. Daniel Monroe, appreciate you, Daniel. I know he's tuning in every week, so really appreciate you tuning in with us, Daniel. Let's see. He says, Rico Clark is an ideal fit if looking for depth at a center defensive midfielder, doesn't take an international slot and does not block Gosselin long term.
Yeah, Houston's still negotiating with Ricardo Clark. That's the last I've seen out of the Houston Chronicle. So, you know, for him being able to come home, possibly his last year in his career, I think the part about not blocking Gosselin long term is very important here, because that's the discussion I keep getting to when we talk about we need to add another defensive midfielder. You have to think about Gosselin coming through as a homegrown. He's going to play his first professional minutes this year with Atlanta United 2, but then also Carlos Asensio behind him. Asensio was one of the best sixes in the academy last year and led the team to a national championship. I expect him to see a lot of minutes with Atlanta United 2, and he's coming. So that's two guys that might be your six and your eight going into seasons for a decade. And you don't want to sign a guy who's 23, 24, 25, who's going to play a ton of minutes for that time when Gosselin and Asensio are ready. You want to create a clear pathway for them to get the first team.
Cool. And also, that's not a question here. It's kind of one of my questions here. Do you see any of the draft picks? Do you see maybe anybody really you think could really impress?
It's early days. It's hard to say right now. Gallagher and Wild are playing positions that are kind of crowded, so I wonder what their time's going to be. It's a huge opportunity for Oliver Shannon. Mm-hmm. As a six, as a destroyer defensive midfielder, that's a bit of a need. You know, Kratz can play the six. McCann can play the six. Not in the same way. I think Shannon's a bigger body. He could definitely earn some time. I think he has to grab this opportunity. And he could see maybe the most minutes on the first team out of those three draft picks just because of need. Mm-hmm. If he steps up in preseason, that might change their acquisition strategy. They might not go out into the market.
Let's see. Another question from Daniel Monroe. Let's see. Starting 11 will be the same as last year. Barco in for Assad, Darlington in for Carmona, and Escobar in for Walks?
Yeah, that's my assumption. I think it's the way to get the most talent on the field, mm-hmm. is the 4-2-3-1/4-3-3, depending on how you want to look at it, with those replacements.
Yeah. Let's see. Sean Thompson, our assistant program director, said, Craig, don't you have a show to produce? So, yeah, that's why
he had hopefully he made it in time.
Yeah, hopefully he made it in time. Let's see. Jeff asks, has there been any update on the U.S. Cup locations?
No, not yet. I think it depends on the draw, really, to see who Atlanta United might be playing there. If they're playing an amateur team or a semi-pro team, you're probably looking at doing it at Kennesaw or Gwinnett. Wouldn't surprise me if it's part of the deal to use Colray Field to potentially use it for it'd be first round for Atlanta United, be second or third round for the tournament to play a match there. Because if you're playing a lesser team, it's going to be harder to draw a huge crowd at Mercedes-Benz. But later in the tournament, if you get into the quarterfinal, semifinals, right. final, I think you're going to do it at Mercedes-Benz. Yeah, if there's a trophy on the line, I think you're doing those games.
Do you see, I guess, the only kind of maybe a couple teams that we might, you know, be in the Benz, if it was early on, if it was against maybe FC Cincinnati or maybe Nashville?
Maybe. I mean, it's regional, so I don't think you'd see Cincinnati. I think you're looking at pro teams potentially out of Charleston, as we saw last year, Charlotte, Nashville. Your lower level teams that could pull some upsets and get there, like Chattanooga. I'm trying to think who else is qualified out of the lower divisions. I don't know if the Silverbacks qualified this past year, possibly. Mm-hmm. Definitely could happen, but I just think the lower level games, and remember, they could go on the road too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, you could get drawn to go to Chattanooga and have to play that match there. You could get drawn to go to Nashville to play that match there. So I have to wait and see what the draw could be and what the potential opponents will be. But first game, I would expect to be at a smaller venue.
Gotcha. Let's see. And last question we have for right now. So keep on sending your Facebook questions. We're about to – we'll do the last one, and we'll go into more on the show, and then we'll get back to your Facebook questions. So keep on sending those into us. Anything you want to talk about, the preseason match against Nashville coming up, or anything in the upcoming season, starters, let us know. Let's see. Chris asks, where will Carlton be this season? ATL, Atlanta United 2, or a mix of both squads?
Both, I think. I think he's the one out of the homegrowns who will probably see more time with the first team. He's had some professional minutes under his belt with Charleston before, and I think he feels a need. Gosselin needs to play in the second division. He needs to play matches with the second team. Kunga, Okonkwo, Bello, this is their first real taste of the professional side. So those guys need to focus on the second team.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing you have to keep in mind is Carlton and Gosselin especially, who are probably the closest to first team minutes, need to play at the second team level. It's better for them to play than sit the bench with the first team. They're going to get the training time back and forth. That's not a problem. But you want them to play minutes where they have expectations as opposed to sitting the bench and maybe getting on the field, maybe not.
So valuable this year having
the USL team. To have it locally, too, is huge.
All right, now let's get into some news around the MLS, Jason. Orlando City's made some pretty big signings the past, I think, week and a half. They have really upgraded their midfield and their attacking
Orlando
options.
Has taken all of their chips and pushed them into the middle of the table. I mean, this is everything they have to spend. They've spent it.
Mm-hmm.
Real risky if they have an injury and they have to go find a replacement because they don't have much money to work with. They're maxed out cap-wise. They're maxed out allocation money-wise. But they've brought together a great midfield behind Dom Dwyer. The back line's still a little shaky, but you have one of the best goalkeepers in the league in Joe Pendick. The back line is going to make or break Orlando this season because this midfield, when you're looking at Yuri Rosell coming back to the league, very good with Kansas City, helped them to MLS Cup in 2013, paired with Yoshi Yotun, who will be away with some World Cup duty with Peru, but Yotun was a great addition last year. Then you're attacking midfield Sasha Kljestan pulling the strings. Josue Coleman, young Paraguayan attacker. We'll see how quick he adjusts into the league. Justin Merrim, I mean, one of the best players in this league, period.
Yeah, from Columbus, yeah.
And Dom Dwyer. So that's a great attacking group. The back line, questions at left back. Not sure who's going to win that job. Scott Sutter's a very good right back. Jonathan Spector, very good center back. Jose Aja with him. I think Aja was exposed a little bit here in Atlanta. He was exposed by Tito Vichalba and Speed up top. And I think that's going to be an issue for him throughout. I just don't know if Orlando's going to have the resources to go upgrade in that position now. And behind those guys in the back, they don't have a lot of depth at all. So I'm very interested to see what they do to balance this team out. But Orlando is pushed into a playoff spot in the East, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the number four spot in the East behind the big three.
Yeah, is that change? I know last week we did our two early MLS power rankings. I think you had them, what, 9th or 10th?
I had them 10th.
Okay, so do they jump a couple spots there, or do you think?
Yeah, I think with the combination of moves, they've jumped Columbus. They're my number four team in the East right now.
Okay.
You know, it's New York, it's Toronto as the number one, it's Atlanta as 1A, it's New York right there. The big three of the Eastern Conference, and the big league of MLS, the big three of MLS, to be honest. Then out west, you have Seattle, who's made it MLS Cup back-to-back years. I really like Houston. I really like Real Salt Lake. Portland might take them a little bit longer to catch up with Giovanni Savarese.
Yeah, new manager.
Maybe a little bit of a transition period there. Orlando, probably 8th for me now, probably where I've got them.
Gotcha.
Columbus, there's questions, but there's not a huge drop-off because you added Mike Grella, who's going to replace Merrim. I like Grella a lot. I think Jossie Zardes is not going to be a gigantic drop-off from Ola Kamara. I think Jossie Zardes can go in and score double-digit goals. I think Columbus can be competitive.
Yeah, I mean, this year, that midfield battle between Atlanta and Orlando is going to be something.
Yep. The midfield battle in the East. I mean, take the midfield from New York City with Alexander Ring, Yanhel Herrera, Maxi Morales.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see how they replace Jack Harrison now that he's been sold. But they added pieces to do that. Jesus Medina is one of them. They have Rodney Wallace back. They have a couple other options up top, too, on the wing. So they can replace Harrison. Toronto's midfield is one of the best in the league.
Right.
So it's going to be a great Eastern Conference battle between the top three for sure and an aggressive Orlando team that's put everything on the line.
Yeah, and you quickly mentioned it, but Jack Harrison going to Stoke City and he's getting loaned out
to Middlesbrough.
So
going to Manchester City and being loaned to Middlesbrough.
Oh, it's Manchester City?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Manchester City, New York City.
Yeah.
It makes sense for Manchester City to do this as opposed to Stoke buying him outright or Middlesbrough buying him outright. Hey, he's an England U21. So Manchester City, who has the parent relationship with New York City, they buy him. They bring him in. They loan him to Middlesbrough. If he has a great season, you bring him into your Manchester City camp in the summer and see what he can do.
Okay.
But you don't lose him leaving the group, leaving the parent organization. So smart move for Manchester City, and it was time for NYC. They knew they were potentially going to lose him, and they've upgraded on the wing to be able to handle it.
Gotcha. And let's talk about a little on Monday. Yeah, MLS made the big announcement down there in Miami that officially. I think they did it a few years ago. They had a ceremony, but now this is like more official.
This was a reboot. It's not so much that it wasn't official before; now it's official. It's that things changed. You know, go back to February 5th, 2014, when it was announced from Miami. Atlanta had not been announced. New York City had not taken the field. Orlando had not taken the field. It was a very different MLS.
Mm-hmm.
Well, times have changed now, and it takes a lot more to be successful to come into MLS. And Miami's been working towards that for a while. They thought they had the ownership group right. The stadium's taking forever. They realized they didn't really have the ownership group right. And they went out and got the Moss Brothers, which is the game changer for me in Miami with Miami, with this group, whatever they're going to be called. The Moss Brothers are Miami through and through. They're soccer guys. They're interested in it. They tried to buy the Marlins. They missed out on that, and they might have got a better deal by coming into this. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones who are going to be able to push things through in Miami. They added Masahiro Son, according to Forbes, like 45th most powerful person in the world. Billions and billions and billions of dollars. So you have an ownership group with some serious clout, both locally and internationally now. And you have David Beckham. I think this was the club, and this is why MLS was so patient. This is the last big club to come into the league.
The big city, yeah.
Big, like huge, international.
Right.
This is the one that takes MLS, you know, continues to take them further and further. Because they can do things that Cincinnati can't. They can do things that Nashville can't because of that combination of personalities. So it was worth the wait. I think Miami's going to be better off for it. And when they come into the league in 2020, it's going to be a lot of fun because they're going to come in with some glitz and glamour.
Yeah, because I mean, during their signing ceremony, their announcing ceremony, they had like Messi, they had a bunch of other big stars like wishing David Beckham congratulations. But now everybody is. I saw on MLS Soccer, everybody's now thinking like, you know, by 2020, are you gonna get like a, you know, what was it, probably 33, 34 year old Messi to come?
No, you don't want to go that old. I think you want to go like 30, 31. Look when Beckham came; he came at 31.
Right.
You want to go a little bit younger, and you're looking at guys like Neymar, you know, who would be in that realm. What else is Neymar going to have to do at that point in his career?
Right.
You know, does he want to stay at PSG and play in Ligue 1, or does he want to come conquer Miami?
Right.
You know, I mean, Messi's always a possibility because, you know, Messi knows where the money is from a marketing perspective. It's in the United States. Cristiano Ronaldo at that point, he's going to be 34. You know, it's maybe, maybe not. I think Miami's going to go with a mix of big names and young talent. But I think they have to go with some big names. Atlanta could do it the way they did because Atlanta's different and the club was built differently. Miami, I don't think, could do that. I think they have to have a focal point. And it can't just be David Beckham. They have to have a focal point on the field, a star.
Right. And I liked a couple of things that David Beckham said. Like, you know, he's talking about, you know, the youth in Miami. You know, of course, you know, David Beckham was in the class of 92 at Manchester United that, you know, won Manchester, you know, all those trophies throughout the 90s. So he knows that youth in Miami is very important. They want to tap into.
He's done academies before. He gets it. He wants to build the club from that side. You know, can he make the transition that Carlos Bocanegra made?
Right.
From on the field and knowing what it takes to be on the field to knowing how to manage it off the field. It's a tough challenge.
And you know, one last thing before we get to your Facebook questions again. MLS and Liga MX Champions match, I saw an ESPN article of that. What are your thoughts on that?
It's a cool idea. It's better than the Superliga, which was like a kind of a second-tier Champions League sort of. That didn't really work. But doing a one-off match between, you know, the MLS Cup champ and the Liga MX champ, yeah, that's a good way to do it. This year it looks like it's going to be in Toronto sometime in September. It's a great focal point for both leagues. I think it's a really good idea.
Cool. Man, let's get to more of your Facebook questions. Let's see what you guys got. Let's see. Stephen Joyce asks, is Barco on the pitch practicing today?
The second session today, I think, is when he was supposed to hit the field for the first time. He was doing medical testing this morning, I believe.
Let's see. And also, do you think he starts, or do you think he comes in as a sub in Nashville?
That just depends on how they structure it. I think he starts. I think they go with the first choice for at least the first 30 minutes.
Cool. Let's see.
Just depends on his fitness, though.
So. Let's see. Mohammed says that McCann is the most undervalued player in Atlanta United.
I think McCann's really important. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. I don't know if I'd go undervalued just because his salary is high for the role he fills. I wonder if that signing would have been made if Tata Martino had been in place. Because remember, he was signed to a two-year deal before Tata Martino got here. I thought he adjusted. I thought early in the season last year, the pace of play was a bit of a challenge for him. But as the year went on, and especially when he played left back, I was really impressed and really liked his work at left back.
Let's see. Dan Morales says, Christ is a diamond midfield guy with two forwards up top.
Not always. Not always. He's shown some versatility. This group, I don't think, works to be a diamond.
Gotcha. And he also asks, how does Merrim fit into that, or do they move to midfield triangle with two wingers?
That's what they have to do, because otherwise you're playing Merrim as a second forward, or you're playing Coleman as a second forward, and it doesn't really suit either one. So, or you're playing Kleschen as a second forward. When we've seen New York try to do that in the past, it doesn't work. So the move for Merrim combined with the move for Rozelle, it just doesn't fit the diamond shape. You could play it with the forwards because you have Dom Dwyer and you have Stefano Pino, two-time NASL MVP, two-time Golden Boot winner in the NASL. But I think to get the most talent on the field, you have to go 4-2-3-1 if you're Orlando.
Okay. Let's see. Dan Monroe also asks, Columbus drops the most in the East, I think. Let's see.
I'm not sure on that. I think New York is the one I have some questions about, the Red Bulls. I don't know how they replace Sasha Kleschen's performance. I don't think they have a ready-made replacement. It's going to take Sean Davis stepping up as a playmaker. Tyler Adams said in national team camp this week that he's not a playmaker. He's not a 10. He's not comfortable in that creative role. Kleschen, you know, leading assist guy in the league the last 3 years, that's a big change if you're New York. So I'm probably most worried about teams that were in the playoffs last year about the Red Bulls.
Let's see, and Daniel also says, Miami, I think, will be very successful. They join Los Angeles and New York as the city that can draw talent in itself. What will be glitz and glamour?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is there's not another city that's not in the league right now that can add what Miami adds. So that's why MLS was so patient. That's why they worked with them to get this done. And it's going to pay off in 2020 when they hit the field.
And I see Curtis Jenkins from Footy Mob. I see. I hope I'm pronouncing this right. Who is the
Bougie Cup?
Bougie Cup between Atlanta United, LAFC, Miami, and say Toronto.
Man, probably Miami once they come in. But I guess right now it'd be LAFC, right? I mean, I think Atlanta is like structured just a little differently. Toronto comes off a little differently. LAFC is really going for the image thing. Yeah. There's some moves they're talking about making. They still don't have, I don't know if they have 20 players yet. I wonder about LAFC. I thought they were going to be bigger than this, and they haven't really met my expectations just yet. They still have time.
Yeah.
I think they want to be the Bougie Cup winners. I don't know if they're actually going to end up being that this year. Miami will be, though, once they start. There's no question.
Yeah, I hope they do like a Miami Vice kind of just...
I think they go with the color scheme.
But
go pastels.
Cool.
I mean, go total pastels. Go with the like aqua and fuchsia or aqua and pink.
Yes.
Throw some black in there too as a background. That's there you sweet. Go.
Let's see. We're out of Facebook questions, but I appreciate y'all stopping by for stoppage time. This is our 17th episode, so very cool doing this, and we're going to do this every week. Probably stick to the 1:30 time, just depending on schedules, but. Also, make sure, CCV, thanks for him for joining us.
Yep.
He does Off the Woodwork with Jared Smith. It's going to come out tomorrow, probably around 5 o'clock, so be on the lookout for that. Subscribe to Off the Woodwork on iTunes, because we put everything in there. I'm going to put Jason Longshore's interview he just did with the Midday Show. I'm going to put that up today, and then anything that, Darren Eels comes on, Carlos Bocanegra, and when we have player interviews coming up. All that content will be right there, and also I'll post it on Twitter. So make sure you're following at @ATLSoccer929 and at @929TheGame.
Oh, we've got a good one that we haven't talked about.
Ooh.
Zlatan.
Oh.
Oh, Zlatan. Daniel Monroe asks, how did the Galaxy bring Zlatan in on a TAM deal when Siggy Schmid was crying poor at the draft? I don't know. I don't know, to be honest. You have the 2.8 discretionary TAM, $2.8 million to work with. And that's targeted allocation money you can't trade, so you have to use it on a signing. I don't know if it's the right move. I think it might have been before he went to Manchester United, but his age, coming off a knee injury, didn't exactly look great in his minutes with Manchester United this year. It reeks of desperation to me. If you're the Galaxy, trying to stay relevant in that Bougie Cup race with LAFC, more so than from a soccer perspective, because you just got Ola Kamara. Where are you gonna fit him in, and who at whose expense? It doesn't make sense from a soccer perspective to me. I wonder how much of an impact Zlatan Ibrahimovic makes for you off the field at this stage of his career. I think it's overrated as to how much he does. I think his impact off the field is overrated at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, I put it on Twitter, a few weeks back, we were talking about the Argentina and the South American talent coming to Atlanta United, how we're going the younger route, and how, we don't want to be like going the LA Galaxy route, I said, because you're bringing in those older European players, and you're bringing Zlatan, he's going to be 37 in October this year.
It's different for every team, though, and not everybody can do the Atlanta route.
Right.
This route would not work in Miami. It wouldn't work in Los Angeles. Not immediately. It wouldn't work in a lot of cities, because some of these cities, you have to have a star.
Okay.
We've seen it with Miami with the Heat. Nobody cared about the Miami Heat until LeBron James showed up.
True.
And, I mean, Dwayne Wade was a star in Miami, but he couldn't carry it by himself. So, and then when LeBron left, you're back to the old Heat.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have stars in some cities. Miami's one, LA's one. So I get why the Galaxy, combined with LAFC and the whole glitz and glamour that they're trying to do, I get it. I just think it's a bad decision with the lineup they have. I think they've had a good offseason. Ola Kamara, good forward in this league.
They have had a good offseason.
Roman Alessandrini, great player in this league. Perry Kitchen, pair him with Jonathan Dos Santos, much better holding midfield than he had last year. It's a good team. I think it gets worse with Zlatan, because I don't think he's going to give you on a day-in, day-out basis in Major League Soccer what Ola Kamara gives you.
Right.
He might sell some shirts.
Yeah, I mean, jersey sales.
The Galaxy were last place last year. They have to get back, because if they have another bad season on the field with what LAFC is doing across town, you're in a really bad spot, a deep hole to climb out of. It's not easy.
Any more questions before?
That would be it, sir.
Okay. And, thank you for stopping by for Stoppage Time. I'm Jimmy Vance with Jason Longshore. And, just like what Jason said at the beginning of the show, we'll be broadcasting the Nashville match. And be on the lookout for that. So we're going to have great content there. And also Dukes and Bell next Friday is going to be in Nashville and at Tailgate Brewery in Music Row. So that's going to be cool. And, Jason will be probably stopping by, too, with some good commentary on that as well.
Lots of stuff going on around the soccer scene right now. Second Self Sunday. With Terminus
League. Yeah, I'll be there playing.
You playing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm playing. All in.
I'm staying out of that. You're all in like Jason Christ.
Yeah, but they have a cool event at Second Self Brewery. They're going to do a poker tournament. And I think they're doing they're painting banners and flags, kind of all that cool stuff. And a Super Bowl watch party. So if there's... I'm not sure if their place is still available, but go to Terminus Legion's Facebook page. They'll have more info there. And I know supporter groups are gearing up, too. Yeah. I know a bunch of them I've already heard on Twitter. Resurgence has over 200 going up there. And Footy Mob's got maybe over 100.
It's going to be about 1,000 fans from Atlanta heading up to Nashville, it looks like. That game, they've just released a few more tickets. I'm not sure if they're gone already.
I posted that a couple days ago, so they did release some more tickets.
10,000 plus at First Tennessee Park for a preseason match. Yeah, welcome to the new world of soccer in the South, huh?
I'm interested to see how that goes down there. I mean, it'll be just crowd controlled. There'll be so many people there.
Yeah. Can't wait. I just can't wait for this whole thing to get started. It's fun talking lineups. It's fun talking about what might happen. It's fun talking transfer season. It's so much better to talk about matches.
Yeah. And next weekend, it starts. So it starts the journey for this year. But appreciate you stopping by for Stoppage Time. Again, I'm Jimmy Vance. I'm with Jason Longshore. And until Wednesday, we'll talk to you later. All right? See ya.